Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, sawadikarup, guten tag, ciao, viva, catbang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace how, go vegan, from the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison Kilitary Industrial Core Poor Nation. In a cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy, mocracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA. They're all the same, aren't they? Home of Uncle Sam Manella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat, and you volunteer for it, huh? This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and I don't know, I'm a little partied out till the wee hours of the morning, partying on a school night when I'm supposed to get the show together, but everybody says, oh, don't worry, you can do this. You know, in your sleep, you've been doing it for 13 years now. But every week is a new experience when we examine animal issues and vegan issues. And, you know, for me, it was just great to get out and forget about those issues for a little bit. Go to a party where you find Dixie May, who's like, you know, just about 80 years old now, president of the San Francisco Vegetarian Society, you know, which used the word vegetarian back when it meant more like vegan, you know. So she's tap dancing at the party, and then you have the red panda acrobats, Wayne from that group, who performs every year at the World Veg Fest for the San Francisco Vegetarian Society. He's 51 and doing the most amazing acrobatic feats imaginable. Wow, these vegans are just totally amazing. I mean, well, as you will find out later in the program, we have a couple of vegans who are in their 60s, and they just accomplished the most amazing athletic I don't know. This is this is a book of world records material. Yes, the most amazing athletic accomplishment. We'll talk about it later with Jeanette Murray Wakelin and Alan Murray, and we have Melissa Bray coming up. She is the nutrition and fitness consultant with Greenlight Meals, and we'll have some practical tips from her. And then also in the second hour, animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione, talking about Taiji dolphins and the New York carriage horse trade. And it was Gary last week who pointed out that it seems like the so-called animal rights movement has hit a new low with Mercy for Animals' new partnership with Tyson Pig Killers. It's really quite amazing. But the betrayal of animals continues. I mean, I don't know. I do not know how to differentiate between animal advocates and animal killers anymore when Mercy for Animals becomes, well, it's Mercy for Animal Killers. You know, I mean, this pathetic partnership of brainwashing people who want to help animals and the positions supported by Mercy for Animal Killers at this point. I mean, I thought maybe it was a mistake when Mercy for Animals Killers partnered with United Egg Producers and supported battery cages, you know, so-called furnished cages, which it used to not support, which it used to oppose until it did a complete reversal and would not explain you know, I kept asking, what changed, where you would change your position? And no answers from Nathan Runkle or Matt Rice, who are invited to be on this program at any time. We invited them last week to address Professor Francione's criticism. It's an open invitation for them to explain this amazing partnership with animal killers right now. And I thought maybe it could have been a mistake, you know, support with United Egg Producers and you know, maybe Mercy for Animals was coerced by the Humane Meat Society of the United States. But Professor Francione says it's a new low. MFA on its website, you know, extolling progress for pigs. Tyson does a turnaround. And MFA is taking credit, you know, for Tyson, the second largest U.S. pork producer, now embarking on, quote, MFA says, an important new era and direction for the company. A new era. We're happy. We're cheerleaders for these serial killers of pigs, you know, urging suppliers to make changes and then links to the Tyson propaganda with Tyson logos. I mean, you know, you have Mercy for Animals Killers more allied with the animals killers than vegans. I mean, MFA hardly uses the word vegan anymore. It seems to use the word vegetarian, knowing the confusion now that lacto and ovo have been dropped, and people just think, oh, you know, you eat eggs, you consume dairy, you're a vegetarian, right? And I think MFA is trying to make it where, you know, vegans can eat bacon. You know, you can be a swino-vegan, I guess. And, you know, what Mercy for Animals is doing is really very, very disturbing. Very disturbing indeed, because Mercy for Animals, in trying to get its supporters to believe that now, you know, the killing of the little piglets will change, it's so awful that they slam their heads against the ground, and so Mercy for Animals says, quote, you know, yay, Tyson's. Tyson will require contract farmers to adopt alternative methods of euthanasia for piglets. You know, it's not killing, it's not murder, you know, it's euthanasia, consistent with guidelines recommended by the American Veterinary Medical Association and the AVMA guidelines for euthanasia. Well, first of all, euthanasia is derived from Greek. It's called good death. The translation is good death. And what are the mechanisms of this good death supported by Mercy for Animals and its supporters? Well, euthanizing agents cause death by three means, say the veterinarians here. One, direct depression of neurons necessary for life function. Two, hypoxia, commonly achieved by exposing animals to high concentrations of gases that displace oxygen, such as carbon dioxide, nitrogen, argon, carbon monoxide. And as with other methods, animals may exhibit convulsions following loss of consciousness, and that hypoxia is deprivation of oxygen. Physical disruption of brain activity produced through a blow to the skull, resulting in concussive stunning. This is approved by the veterinarians. This is what's recommended by Mercy for Animals Killers. This is what's supported by the supporters of MFA. Through direct destruction of the brain with a captive bolt, a bullet, or a pithing rod, or depolarization of brain neurons following electrocution. Okay, these are the methods of euthanasia that suddenly the animal rights movement decides to support. Well, I guess it'll sound good to people when you're asking for donations. It's like, oh, okay, we're just we just want depolarization of brain neurons, right? That can't hurt so much, right? When it's put that way, when it's called euthanasia instead of killing. So, methods of euthanasia: inhaled agents like vapors and gases, as I mentioned, non-inhaled agents not delivered through the respiratory system, possibly by injection, topical application, immersion. And, you know, Mercy for Animals is supporting, well, okay, when we come to pigs, which is, they are the subject of this wonderful new era by the mass killers of pigs. Injection of barbiturates, gassing, carbon dioxide, nitrogen, argon. The physical methods acceptable that Mercy for Animals is saying, yay, Tyson's, and all their supporters are saying, yes, oh, you would want this too if it were you, if you were the pig, right? You would want a gunshot, right? You would want a penetrating captive bolt in your head. You wouldn't want electrocution. You would want manually applied blunt force trauma. All acceptable, all the methods for which we are now working, huh? And what's amazing is that Tyson's is promising to fund research now, you know, for alleviating pain when it comes to castration and tail docking. Well, so now we're an animal rights movement for vivisection. Isn't that wonderful? How many mice and rats will die as a result of this new research that will be conducted? How many pigs will die in research to alleviate their pain? It's really quite amazing, huh? And why do we believe these promises that we get from animal killers? You know, I mean, like, why is the animal rights movement so willing to accept promises from the abusers? We had Mr. X on the program last week. Happy birthday today, Mr. X. He went undercover. He was at Tyson's in 1998. It's the same story. It's the same story. January 2008, investigation led by Dr. Kelly Falsgraf, who is the manager of the Office of Well-Being at Tyson's. This is after a PETA investigation. Oh, are we out of time on this? Darn. You know what? I'm going to pick up on this after the break and continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. You can support the program by being an advertiser. Email me. It's bob@goveganradio.com. Or you can make a tax-deductible donation. Click donate at goveganradio.com. Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com, on Twitter @goveganradio, and doing further examination. We started on the subject last week with Professor Gary Francione, who called the Mercy for Animals partnership now, or cheerleading campaign for Tyson's pig killers, a new low in animal rights, so-called animal rights. And the invitation is there for representatives from Mercy for Animals killers to come on the program to really explore its policies, which are incomprehensible, other than they seem to me to be an amazing betrayal of the animals and the people who want to help animals, who run to the support of Mercy for Animals. And why are we believing that these animal killers will ever live up to their words? Their words are empty promises. I started to mention before the break a statement from Tyson. January 2008, after investigation by PETA, and you had your Office of Well-Being at Tyson's spokesperson, Dr. Kelly Falsgraf, saying, quote, you know, we train our workers on proper animal handling practices. In fact, workers who do not follow company policy in this area are subject to disciplinary action, including termination of employment. And then Tyson put out a press release at that time, which said, quote, "We are committed to proper animal handling in all aspects of our operations." Then in 2008, another statement from Tyson's, quote, "Leading the industry in pursuit of new and improved technology and methods to further enhance animal well-being, workers are trained in ethical animal treatment." Well, that, hey, fine then, right? Okay, hey, we can all start eating bacon again. In 2011, the USDA investigating Tyson chicken cruelty charges. Okay, and Tyson, you know, it's basically synonymous with Smithfield. You know, I mean, these things happen all the time. We see undercover investigations which show the normal practices. If you're going to kill animals who don't want to be killed, there will be cruelty on camera if you catch it, okay? It's violent. It's violent, and it's mass murder. So we see them smacking an animal or kicking, and oh, it's so terrible. Well, what about the killing? But anyway, it's all these empty lies, promises. They say they'll improve things. In 2007, Smithfield said it would phase out gestation crates. Okay, let's look at this. Smithfield reneges plans to phase out gestation crates. Okay, this from Source Watch, Center for Media and Democracy. In June 2009, Smithfield announced it could not afford to go through with its highly publicized animal welfare improvements. The company announced it would delay plans to replace gestation crates for pregnant sows with more humane group housing. Previously, in January of 2007, the company had announced a 10-year phasing out of gestation crates. Crates are used to keep pregnant and nursing sows immobile during the course of 3 years of their typically four-year lifespan. As breeding sows, during this time, they typically give birth and nurse 5 to 8 litters or about a dozen piglets. All 187 Smithfield-owned pig nurseries and Smithfield contract farms were scheduled to move sows to group pens, but at the time, Smithfield concluded that the crates could be replaced with group pens without any long-term problems. But we have a Smithfield worker talking about the group pens, saying, quote, 40 fully grown 250-pound male hogs often occupy a pen the size of a tiny apartment and trample each other to death. There's no sunlight, straw, fresh air, or earth. Floors are slatted to allow excrement to fall into a pit underneath. Temperatures in hog houses often exceed 90 degrees. The air is so saturated with dust, excrement, and chemicals that enormous exhaust fans must run 24 hours a day. If they break down for any length of time, pigs start to die off. This is our cause here. This is what, you know, instead of asking people to go vegan and not participate in the cruelty, we're asking people to support the lies and the unfulfilled promises of companies like Tyson's and Smithfield. And here the worker at Smithfield said, quote, "The line is so fast that there is no time to sharpen the knife. The knife gets dull and you have to cut harder." Well, why isn't Mercy for Animals Killers petitioning for knife sharpeners, huh? That's our cause now, right? Okay, animal advocates, we want knife sharpeners at all Tyson facilities. Okay, it's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com and Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Support us with a donation at GoVeganRadio.com. Please. Thank you. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Thank you for listening. And it was January of 2001 that we started this program. So this month we commemorate 13 years broadcasting, as heard on the Air America Radio Network and CBS and Clear Channel radio stations, and now nationally syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network, GCN. We are live every Sunday from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and archives are at goveganradio.com. And GCN considers this program to be its first food show. So here we are, you know, breaking through as we have in commercial media, and with the vegan message as the first food show. And well, I mean, the vegan message is happening. I don't know if you noticed The Guardian. It's one of the only newspapers, news sources worth examining these days. The Guardian, in its Sustainable Living Hub, just noted with the headline, Veganuary. Veganuary could be a stepping stone to more sustainable eating. Go vegan for January. How short-term positive campaigns could help people reconsider the way they eat. And this is, you know, I mean, this is The Guardian here saying, what if I said you could switch to a diet of tasty, healthy food, which could reduce your weight and lessen your impact on the environment, more so than you, if you stopped driving and flying? What if this meant you would be eating no eggs, dairy, meat, or fish? This January, thousands of people have joined the Veganuary campaign, stepping up to the challenge of giving veganism a go for 31 days. Of course, once you go vegan, you can never go back. And so this has grown with the whole Veganuary Facebook community, with over 5,000 Facebook fans there. Just one note in this article here. It says that livestock emissions currently account for 14.5% of global greenhouse gases, and that is an error because people like to quote the very pro-meat UN Food and Agriculture Organization. If you look at the examination, the analysis of the UN report by World Watch climate experts, World Watch Institute, World Bank, they say that animal agriculture is responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So whether you are participating in Veganuary, or it's your New Year's resolution to be vegan, to improve your health, or you're doing it for the environment or for animals, we have help for you with Melissa Bray, who's talking to us throughout January. You can hear her from the archives from the previous weeks of this program. And Melissa is the nutrition and fitness consultant with Greenlight Meals. That's G-R-E-E-N-L-I-T-E meals.com, which is vegan home delivery, vegan meal home delivery, or office delivery, which makes your Veganuary or New Year's resolutions easy to fulfill also at greenlightmeals.com. So welcome again, Melissa. How are you today?
Hi, Bob. I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you?
Doing fine. Doing great.
Happy Veganuary.
Happy Veganuary. Yes,
I like every that.
Yeah, me too. And then we have to make every month Veganuary.
That's
we'll
right.
Have to have Veganuary, Vegarch, Vegmay.
I think baby steps are great, though. I love the Meatless Mondays campaign and Veganuary. And, you know, I think that the more open-minded and less dogmatic we can be as vegans, this is my personal philosophy. If you have friends that aren't vegan, just baby steps. And by making a clever thing like Veganuary or Meatless Mondays, we encourage people to try it. And then hopefully they find out it's not as hard as they thought it was. They can make some delicious meals and they're on board, you know.
Right. Well, and then there's my opinion, which is take giant steps and go, you know, I'm the one who talks on behalf of meatless as well as dairyless and eggless and fishless Tuesday through Sunday also, you know, to recognize that, you know, it's really not the goal. Maybe it's a starting point. You know, let's say we'll do, you know, this on Mondays for a month or something. But then you realize, you know, you can't really participate in all the other bad stuff all the other time, and this can't be an excuse just to say, hey, I'm handling it by doing this, you know? So I'm for the, like, hey, just do it all, you know
what
I mean?
Dive in the deep end.
Yeah, yeah, what the heck?
That's what I did, and it's probably what you did. I dove in the deep end, so, yeah, hopefully.
Well, I wasn't that aware. I became what I thought I was doing something by being what I thought was vegetarian, but I consumed dairy and eggs thinking nobody gets hurt until I found out everybody gets hurt, everybody right. gets killed, and if I'm doing it for the animals, I can't continue to have dairy and eggs, I mm-hmm. have to be vegan. So, yeah, I mean, it was all for the animals. So, yeah, I was cooking chicken one night, and I said, wait a second here. No, this being did not volunteer to jump in my frying pan as much as we tell ourselves, oh, that's the purpose of the animals. I saw the body. I said, somebody's body. This isn't right. I can't participate in the violence and killing. And so I became the first, vegetarian I knew, the first one. And I was engaged to a butcher's daughter at the time, which was really not good for, not good for in-law relations. Well, ex-in-law relations now, I suppose.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, Melissa, tell us how, give us some practical pointers on accomplishing our goals and getting started with, you know, being healthier and with fitness and nutrition.
That's a great idea for Veganuary. So hopefully the listeners can go grab a pencil real quick. I'm sure I might mention some things you've already heard, but you might learn something new today or be re-reminded of something you had forgotten. So I talk kind of fast, so I'll try and at least articulate clearly, but that's why I encourage listeners to maybe go grab a pen or pencil or jot it down on text it to yourself. That's what I do sometimes on my cell phone. The first tip that I would give that would be the most important if you're trying to lose fat and get leaner would be to eat a small meal or snack every 3 waking hours of the day. Now, there's the key is the waking hours. So look at how many hours you are awake during the day. So if you wake up at 6 a.m. and you go to bed at 11, you want to look at that and space it out about every 2 to 4 hours, with 3 being the ideal. Don't go more than an hour without without breaking that fast. That's what breakfast is. Breakfast is breaking the fast. So eat a small meal every 3 waking hours would be one of the best steps that you could do to get leaner. The second thing that I would encourage you to do is drink a minimum of 80 to 100 ounces of water every day. Carry around an eco-friendly jug, measure it out so you have a goal to look at. The more water you drink, the more water you flush out of your body and the less water weight you hold on to. Plus, we can very easily get dehydrated, keeps you from getting hungry, fills you up, great for your skin. We all under-drink water. I encourage 80 to 100 ounces a day. The third thing that I would recommend is to eat a small amount of healthy fat with each meal. Have you ever made yourself a smoothie, and let's say you put some strawberries in it, a little bit of protein powder, and some almond milk, and then an hour later you're like famished, and you're like, I just ate something. I've done that, and it's usually when I've forgotten the fat. So go ahead and throw in some coconut oil or even some olive oil or a handful of nuts or something or some almond butter to hold you over. Put some avocado on some organic corn tortillas with some sort of protein and vegetables or whatever. But have a little bit of healthy fat at each meal. That's a great way to hold you over to the next meal. And healthy fats help you burn fats, and they're good for so many things. Another tip I would give is to avoid starchy carbohydrates at nighttime. Now, I'm not an advocate of avoiding complex carbohydrates all day long, but at nighttime, it makes sense, right, that we're not going to need any bread and white rice and starchy potatoes at nighttime. Your metabolism is slower. It wants something fibrous carbs like broccoli and lettuces. And one of my favorite things to do, Bob, is that I make lettuce wraps. So I will take a organic veggie patty or something similar to that, or some tempeh or something like that, and put it on lettuce wraps. And then you can load it with grilled onions, red peppers, condiments, anything you would normally put in a bun. You could put it on a romaine lettuce leaf, and it's so satisfying. You have that crunch to it. So that's a great way to still be satisfied with a wonderful meal, but take out those starchy carbs that are going to turn into fat. I've got a couple more tips here. I could keep going and going, but I'll give about 2 or 3 more of my top ones. Include more protein in your diet, okay? It's very easy if you're conscientious to get more protein as a vegan. You can, if you make a smoothie, throw some protein powder in it. If you make usually some veggie tacos or a salad, throw some sort of organic tofu or tempeh, or if you eat replacement meats, a lot of people don't these days, but that's an easy way to add protein to your meals. And especially as we're taking the carbs out, you have to replace those calories with something. We still have basic caloric needs, and so you can't just take out the carbs and not replace it with like protein, vegetables, healthy fats, or you'll be starving, and that's how you lead to a binge. Mm. And then one of the number one things that I would say is, I got two more here, Bob, so just to flag me down if I'm running out of time. If you do cheat or fall up the wagon, don't wallow in guilt, okay? That's one of the worst things you could do. Just vow to get right back on the wagon. Number one, it's not healthy. And number two, it actually releases cortisol, okay? Cortisol, the stress hormone, and cortisol can make you store fat, particularly belly fat. So that's, if you want to give yourself a number one motivation not to stress about cheating, you're going to make yourself fatter by actually stressing about that cheat meal. There's the irony in that. And then I would say cook your meals in advance. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. So prepare your meals in advance. Pick 2 days that you cook, or you could join a gourmet vegan food delivery service such as Greenlight Meals, greenlightmeals.com. That's who I work for. And through January, we're offering listeners a 30% discount on their first month. It's the Fit for Life plan under the custom meals, and they just need to put in the coupon code CustomFit30. I'm actually starting the Fit for Life challenge on Wednesday. I gained a little bit of holiday weight. Trainers gain weight, too. I need to get it off, and you can follow my journey on the website. I'm going to be blogging about it. I'm going to be eating the same food. I'm going to be eating tips. You can eat exactly what I eat, and we could do this together.
Mm. And the menu is there at greenlightmeals.com. It just looks so fantastic. Every week I look at it this time, and it's like, I want to go to the door. I wish you were coming to my door right now. And
yeah.
it can come to yours. Just go to the website, greenlightmeals.com, GREENLITE meals.com. And thanks, Melissa, for being with us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Bob. Talk to you again.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye. Okay. We will continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter, at Go Vegan Radio, you can hear my vegan animal liberation commentary on the Pacifica radio station in the San Francisco Bay Area, KPFA, the legendary first Pacifica radio station ever. Pacifica, with a mission statement dedicated to peace, finally has vegan animal liberation subject matter on Wednesday mornings between 8 and 9 o'clock on the morning mix. It's 94.1 FM in the Bay Area, or kpfa.org, and also in the Bay Area. You're quite fortunate to have one of the world's best vegan restaurants, which is Vegetarian House, 100% vegan and organic and delicious, at 520 East Santa Clara Avenue in San Jose. I suggest you look at the menu. It's just a vast array of international delicacies that you find there. No GMOs, many raw options, and you have the option to have catering by Vegetarian House for your event, whether it's a business event or social event in the Bay Area. If you have a wedding coming up, why not make sure that the food is great and you take care of the vegans, the important ones in your life, you know? So, and everybody loves great vegan food, so check it out, Vegetarian House, the website, vegetarianhouse.us, vegetarianhouse.us, one of my favorite restaurants in the universe. I do want to say how saddened we are to note the passing of Rin Berry, author and historian who contributed so much in intellectual advancement and scholarship to the vegan animal rights movement. So sad to hear. He was a guest on this program. I believe there are 5 interviews. If you go to goveganradio.com and look for guests, Rin Berry, R-Y-N-N, Berry, B-E-R-R-Y, most recently on our December 22nd program. And Rin was a one-of-a-kind, basically. He did his undergraduate and graduate work at the University of Pennsylvania and Columbia University, with a major concentration in ancient studies. He was the historical advisor to the North American Vegetarian Society and the author of The New Vegetarians, Famous Vegetarians, Food for the Gods, Vegetarianism and the World's Religions, Hitler, Neither Vegetarian Nor Animal Lover, Becoming Raw, The Essential Guide to Raw Vegan Diets, with Brenda Davis and Vicente Molina, and The Vegan Guide to New York City. And his works were translated, and I do suggest that we take the opportunity to investigate his writings. So his works have been translated into Nepalese, German, Italian, Taiwanese, Chinese, Polish, Bulgarian, Hungarian, and languages I won't even pretend to try to pronounce. He also wrote numerous articles on veganism and allied topics with the Oxford Companion to American Food and Drink and the Oxford Encyclopedia of Food and Drink. And he has written essays that include The First Vegetarian Thanksgiving, Why Hitler Was Not a Vegetarian, Fruitarianism, The Ultimate Diet, The Roots of American Vegetarianism, and the 21 Salient Features of Religions that Promote Ethical Vegetarianism. And these have appeared in scholarly and spiritual journals. And he was just a wonderful public speaker. Wrote a number of plays, Mona Lisa's Smile, The Buddha's Last Supper, many, many more. Again, you know, for somebody who had the hobby of translating Greek and Latin texts, he will surely be missed. You know, I mean, he's somebody who led us to the truth and is irreplaceable, you know, I mean. Who else is fluent in the ancient languages who can guide us through the misinterpretations of history? So Rin Berry will be missed. You can hear his interviews at goveganradio.com. Once again, welcome to our second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Yes, we have expanded to 2 hours for our national syndication through the Genesis Communications Network. Yes, the same network that syndicates Alex Jones, now Man Cow, and also Bob Linden. What a trio there, right? I'm probably the one to make everybody else look normal on the network. I don't think vegans are that normal. You know, I think they're exceptional. It's quite amazing. The, you know, people keep thinking, oh, those wimpy vegans, you know, like, who is a wimpy vegan? Huh? Elephants? Are they wimpy vegans? Or bulls? Are they wimpy vegans? And then people turn to athleticism, and it's like, oh, those wimpy vegans, huh? Well, I should put together, you know, for some sports championship or for some Olympics, I could put together a roster of athletes whom I think would win. You know, I mean, that wimpy powerlifting sport. Recently, Patrick Baboumian of Germany lifted over 1,200 pounds, setting a world record. You remember watching UFC on TV with Mac Danzik, UFC champion? And then, oh, nobody could beat Pacquiao in boxing, right? Nobody could beat him until Timothy Bradley came along, vegan. And let's see, bodybuilding, oh, Kenneth G. Williams, who made a team that was comprised of not vegans, but he was the vegan on the bodybuilding team. Oh, tennis. How about the Williams sisters, huh? Win the Olympics, and the Open and all, and Scott Jurek, you know, all of the endurance sports and all. And what if we wanted to have marathon runners in the Olympics? Who would they be? Perhaps my next guests who everybody's in shock when I mention what they did. I think this is the greatest athletic accomplishment ever. And I welcome Jeanette Murray Wakelin and Alan Murray to the program. How are you doing today?
We're doing very well, thank you.
Well, thank you. Thanks for being with us. We're talking to you in Australia, but you know that. Our listeners probably may not have, but you're in Australia now. Now, people don't believe me what I normally say is I'm having a couple on my program this weekend who are in their 60s and they're vegan and they ran a marathon. Isn't that the most amazing accomplishment? I mean, people in their 60s running a marathon, isn't it? And everybody says, I can't believe it. That's so terrific. And then, but there's an asterisk. Tell us, how many marathons did you run over the course of what period of time?
We ran 366 marathons consecutively. So that's one a day for 366 days. So the 365, of course, is a full year of marathons. And then we did one extra on January 1st this year.
Right. Well, you could have done it. You could have done it in a leap year to have it all in a year. But you did it this year. So I mean,
that it's about the distance. You know, when you run around Australia, the continent, it computes to around 365 marathons. So it was a given.
Nobody has ever done that previously. You running 366 consecutive days, a marathon every day, and
not that we're aware of. We've actually got it in with the World Records Academy at the moment. And as far as we're aware, no one's actually run one each day consecutively. So we'll see how that goes. But certainly, no one of our age or raw vegans.
Right.
And the fact that we ran it basically barefoot, we wear the Vibram barefoot shoes, and so on all terrains around Australia. So
and that was basically barefoot. Is that what you said?
Well, basically, yes. We wear the barefoot shoes, so the five finger Vibram shoes that put your toes in.
Right.
And so they don't have any support. Per se, like a regular running shoe, which is great because it assimilates running barefoot, so you don't get injured. And we had no injuries.
I'm so amazed. Well, first of all, my first thought was, well, how do you? My feet would hurt. My feet hurt thinking of one marathon or just a few miles. You know, it's like, how do you get past that? And now you're telling me you didn't really have cushion support, but that helped you not get injured. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, that's right. It's if you're running barefoot or walking barefoot with no shoes at all, then your body, walks or runs correctly for you. And so, apart from standing on something sharp or the shoes that we wear, they just protect us from, getting cut with glass or standing on a very sharp stone or something like that. So there's no, artificial support, if you like. And so the body just walks and runs correctly, and therefore you don't get injured. Just like children when they run about barefoot and they're little before we put shoes on them.
Right.
Yeah, so, and you run very lightly on your feet as well, so which has two advantages. One is obviously treading lightly on the earth, and secondly, you can really feel you know, where you're going, and you can feel the ground beneath you and you can adjust accordingly. So, yeah.
And what distance was that? What distance did you cover? That 366 consecutive marathons on 366 consecutive days. What distance would that be?
It was around 16,700 and something. 15,700 and 40-something, I think. I haven't got
You talk in kilometers, but we translate it. Is that close to 10,000 miles? Is that what it translates to?
It is close to 10,000 miles. We didn't run exactly the exact distance of 26.2 miles every day. Sometimes we ran more. So just depending on, you know, the day, if we needed to go a little bit further to set up camp or something like that. So we never ran less than a marathon distance, but sometimes we ran more. So we clocked up a few extras. Over the course of the year, we clocked up an extra 8 marathons, I think, over and above the 366.
It becomes more amazing with everything you tell me. It's like, oh, we did it barefoot. Oh, was it all uphill? I mean, you only chose to go uphill probably, right? Just to, you know, and it had to be longer than a real marathon, of course, you know. I mean,
yes, this of course, Yeah, well, right. We did have some pretty grueling uphills, but not as much as, you know, when we ran the length of New Zealand. That definitely was running mountains, but Australia is relatively flat and rolling terrain around the edge of the, you know, we followed the outside circumference of the country, and with just a few hills here and there that we did. But the most challenging part of the run, I think, for us was more the weather. So different weather conditions that were a bit more challenging than the actual running.
And what were the worst weather conditions that you had to face?
Well, the absolute worst overall was when we had a day of extreme cold, and it was over on the west coast, coming down towards Perth, and we had several storms coming through over a period of about 4 days, and we had to keep running, so we were out in freezing horizontal rain. Which turned to hail, and I'm not sure what the conversion is, but it was about 60-70 kilometer an hour headwind. So it was pretty mean from the point of view of running in it, but also it was an area where our support crew couldn't pull over as often as we would have liked. And so, you know, we got very close at one point to going into hypothermia. So it was a little bit scary. But because we're really, you know, in a state of real optimum health, when we were able to pull over and we were so cold we couldn't speak or move our fingers, we just got toweled down and changed into dry clothes and had some fruit and a smoothie, and within about 40 minutes we were okay to go back out there into it. So I think, because of the food that we eat,
What were you eating along the way?
Well, the majority of what we ate throughout the whole year was fresh fruit, and any kind of fruit that you can imagine, whatever we could get. A lot of bananas, of course, because you can always get those for the majority of the time. We were probably averaging about 20 to 30 bananas a day each. And because the other thing too is that we needed to get 3,000 to 4,000 calories a day, and that's, you know, from real food. So we were.
Is that like 10,000 bananas or something? 10,000 or 11,000 bananas.
Well, 30 bananas a day, for instance, will give you 3,000 calories. But we didn't just eat bananas, so we would have, you know, we'd have them in our smoothies as well as just eating them. About every 10K or so, we might need more water, and then we'd have, you know, several bananas while we were there for a break, you know, during the run. Mm. But
It was a total of close to 10,000 bananas or something, right? That you ate a total of 10 or 11,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Just trying to apply mathematical formula to, you know, like. And also, you said you were in optimum health when you were running. You also have overcome breast cancer, haven't you?
Yes, that's right. I had a diagnosis about almost 12 years ago now, and that was, not a good prognosis. So I was sort of given 6 months, pretty much, to live, and I didn't think that was enough. So so I made a lot of really, you know, conscious lifestyle choices. I was already pretty much vegan, vegetarian, mostly vegan at that time. So I just eliminated all food that had a negative effect.
We need to take a break, but we'll continue our discussion with Jeanette Murray Wakelin, Alan Murray. They ran 366 marathons in 366 days. We'll continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio. You can look for the Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden Facebook page. And glad you're listening today. Before the break, we began our discussion with Jeanette Murray Wakelin. She and her husband, Alan Murray, have accomplished, well, this is one of the greatest athletic accomplishments ever, I believe. In 2013, they ran a marathon every day and then decided to run one on January 1st, 2014, 366 consecutive days, 366 marathons. They are in their 60s. They are raw vegans. And we were discussing before the break that you were challenged by breast cancer a while back, given a poor prognosis, and you've overcome that. And you have a book addressing that too, don't you, Jeanette?
Yes, I do. Published, came out last year, about midway through the year. So the book is entitled Raw Can Cure Cancer, and anybody can find the details of that on my personal website, which is rawcancure.com. And we will be coming stateside later in the year, so that will also be up on the website. And on the Running Raw website as well, so we might be able to catch up with some few people when we're over there.
Right. Well, we'll talk again, or I'll let people know where you might be. Again, you said it's rawcancure.com, and the book is called Raw Can Cure Cancer. And so it worked for you, right? I mean, how did you decide this would be your approach, and how did it prove itself to be successful for you?
Well, it didn't make sense to me to compromise the body further if it was already in a state of, you know, imbalance, which is really what all disease in the body is. So it made sense really to just try and give the body everything it needed to reverse the situation. And so I did that with a very different natural ways of, you know, building the immune system or helping the immune system, mostly with vegetables and fruits and juicing and that sort of thing. But also I made some real conscious lifestyle choices at that point, making sure that I did 100% the best I possibly could in all the choices I made in my life and for myself and for my health. And, you know, within the 6 months, the body had reversed the situation, and I've been able to go on, you know, here, you know, 11, 12 years later to do something that, you know, physically, mentally, and emotionally would not have, you know, would not have been possible had I not made those choices. So
it's so amazing. Who had the idea? Who said, "Hey, let's run a marathon every day for the next 366 days"? How did that come to mind?
I have to say it was me. And when we moved to Australia, which is almost 5 years ago now, I said, "Oh, wouldn't it be great if we could just spend enough time to reach enough people, or to reach as many people as possible, with the, you know, really good positive message that, which is, you know, the reason why we were running around Australia, really, was to get that positive message out about making conscious lifestyle choices, which makes a huge difference to your health and the health of others." So Alan said, "Well, do you realize how big this country is?" And because we'd run the length of New Zealand, back in the year 2000, and that was 50 marathons in 50 days. So we knew, you know, physically what was required to do that, ultra endurance running. But at that time, we were not raw vegan. I was pretty close to being vegan, a little bit vegetarian. And Alan was still actually, eating some other foods that were not that good for him. So we decided when I had the diagnosis, went 100% raw at that time. And so as those years have gone by, we knew that we were much more capable of doing, you know, something much bigger and in the way of physical, certainly in the way of physical and mentally. So we looked at the distance around Australia, and it actually just sort of computes out to around about 356.
We're out of time. And you never said it at day 287 or day 304. Like, I don't feel like doing this today. You just kept on going, huh? So, and you recovered. We're out of time. When you come to the States, let's come on again. We'll talk about your appearances and your book. Again, it's Jeanette Murray Wakelin, Raw Cat. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. GoVeganRadio.com. On Twitter at GoVeganRadio. Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. And there are a couple of Bob Linden pages also, if you want to get in on those. Just before we go to animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione, I just want to finish up for another minute or two with Jeanette Murray Wakelin, one of the greatest athletes of all time. She and her husband, Alan Murray, doing 366 marathons on 366 consecutive days. Just wanted to ask you, her website is rawcancure.com. Her book is Raw Can Cure Cancer. And when do you expect to be in the United States, Jeanette?
It's looking like August and early September that we're heading there. We're coming over for the Woodstock Fruit Festival, and that's in the last 2 weeks of August. Okay. So we're just sort of putting those dates together right now. But people can still be in touch with us through our Running Raw website, which is runningrawaroundaustralia.com, and there's a link through to our Facebook page from there as well, which we're still keeping updated.
Okay, and we'll let people know also. And just a couple of quick questions. We have maybe a minute left, but so the one thought I had was the motivation. Okay, so it's great day one and great day 366, but, you know, at day 243 or 302, do you how did you stay motivated? You wake up in the morning and go, "Oh, we have to run another 26 or 28 or 30 miles today." How did you motivate yourself?
Well, we stayed motivated really by the fact of the reason why we were doing it was, you know, bringing this message and hopefully to thousands of people, which we did achieve in by the time we finished. And so that really motivated us. There was no question in our minds that we would not continue, because it was so important to show by example what is possible, but also to keep bringing that really good message out about, you know, being thinking more consciously and acting more consciously in your life, and you know, with vegan, with the vegan message as well. So that really motivated us, and also the fact that we did have some charities. We do have still some charities that we've been raising awareness and donations for, and just sometimes thinking if we had a, you know, a particularly hard day, just thinking, well, you know, there's plenty of people out there that are having a harder day, so
we think that, and we always think the animals have a hard day and always have it worse than we do too. And just in exactly. maybe 30 seconds left, yesterday I saw this wonderful vegan Chinese acrobat who's 51 years old, and I told him you were going to be on the show today, and what he does is totally amazing. I mean, you know, you'd think he's, you know, and he said, what about recovery time for them? I mean, like, how he needs time to recover. You didn't need time to recover 366 days, a marathon a day. You were fine, huh?
Yes, well, we recovered while we were running. Plus, we tried to make sure that we got plenty of sleep, and sleep is just as important as everything else. So, yeah, we were recovering as we ran because of the food that we eat.
Mm, that's wonderful. Okay. Well, thank you for being with us today. We really appreciate it. You are an inspiration to everyone. So, you know, I mean, like, hey, if you want to be a great athlete, better go vegan than, you know, take up a marathon a day, you know, barefoot in stormy, cold weather.
That's right.
Thanks for being with us today, Jeanette. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Again, the website, rawcancure.com. Unbelievable. Don't you think, Professor Gary Francione, how are you today?
I'm just fine, Bob, and how are you?
Terrific. I just had...
I'm so motivated. I just feel like going out and running a marathon.
Right, but, and they do it barefoot, you know?
Oh, there you go. Well, you know, I mean, look, the idea... I find it so curious that anybody really doubts for a second that a sensible vegan diet isn't so much better for you health-wise. I mean, it's just astounding to me that anyone would question that.
Even for athletic performance, then, you know, because,
yeah, I mean, the thing is that, it, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't feel anywhere near my age, and it's because I eat plant foods. I don't eat decomposing flesh. I don't eat mucus produced by animals intended for, you know, for their babies. I don't eat, you know, I don't eat eggs. I don't eat that stuff. And
I feel great, too. Like you say, we don't feel anywhere near our age.
So. I sure as hell don't. I mean,
I don't. I
want to talk tonight about the moral schizophrenia that we see amongst in society generally, and indeed even amongst a lot of animal advocates, and that is the idea that some animals matter more than others. You know, we have this idea that the non-human great apes matter more than other animals. Why? Because they're like us, which I think in a lot of ways is like saying that, you know, we like people of color with lighter skin than darker skin because they're more like us. I really think it's both cases with the non-human great apes and with people of color with lighter skin, we're talking about discrimination. We're talking about irrational criteria for determining who's a member of the moral community. But it's not just that. It's like, you know, it's this thing we see amongst a lot of animal people, Bob. You see, you know, you see people who do rescue, and they're fantastic people. These people do rescue 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They're killing themselves rescuing animals, and they go home and they eat animals. I just don't understand that. Why is it that they think that dogs and cats or whatever, you know, matter more morally than cows and pigs and chickens and fish or whatnot? And we saw it with Michael Vick. You know, we see people sitting around eating meat and dairy and eggs, criticizing Michael Vick because he was fighting dogs. Well, you know, the animals they eat have lives and deaths every bit as bad, gruesome, horrible, terrifying, distressing as the animals that Michael Vick used. And there are two things that came up this week that I think are sort of curious. And one is this slaughter of dolphins in Japan. I posted something about it on the Abolitionist Approach Facebook site this morning, and already I think we've got 20,000 plus views of the thing that I posted, and it's become somewhat controversial because people take the position that, well, we ought to be focusing on what the Japanese are doing because what they're doing is barbaric and it's terrible and it's horrible. And the answer is yes, of course it is. But, you know, what I don't understand is why don't people, including animal people, see that what the Japanese are doing to the dolphins in the cove is really no different from what's going on around them with in slaughterhouses and you know, hunters and whatnot. I mean, I'm sure that hunters in Pennsylvania today killed many, many more times the number of dolphins. I think the number of dolphins are about 200, but they killed many more times the number of animals hunting today. And so what I don't understand is why people. I mean, I guess we fetishize dolphins, and probably for the wrong reason, the idea that, you know, they're more like us cognitively. But again, that really gets us right back to the idea that the animals that matter more are the ones that are, quote, like us, end quote, rather than just being sentient beings who value their lives even if no one else values them. But they care about their lives. They care about their interests. They value themselves in their way. Their lives are important to them. Their interests are important to them. And so what difference does it make if they're like us cognitively? And again, you know, we see this. Now, I don't know. I mean, some of this, I think, is a lot of the welfare groups and other groups promote this stuff because it keeps us away from thinking about what's going on here, and it also allows people to again broaden. You know, everything is a matter of broadening the donor base. So you broaden the donor base, and you can get a lot of people who are sitting and eating their cheese pizza and their steaks and their hamburgers and their fried chicken, condemning the Japanese for what they're doing to the dolphins, or you know, the allied thing is condemning the Chinese or the Koreans for eating dogs or cats. I mean, that's another one that just boggles my mind. You know, people get all upset about the Chinese and the Koreans eating dogs and cats. Now, I think that that's terrible. I don't think they should do that, but I don't think we should be eating cows, pigs, chickens, fish, cheese, eggs, or anything like that. So, you know, I mean, and why are the Chinese or the the Koreans any worse than us morally because they eat dogs and cats? We fetishize dogs and cats. They don't. They treat the dogs and cats really horribly. So do we treat the animals horribly that we eat. So, I mean, this idea that there's some sort of, you know, that some group, whether it's the Japanese killing dolphins in the cove or whether it's the Chinese or the South Koreans, you know, that they have some sort of monopoly on evil, I think it's just really counterproductive. I think it's racist. I think it's xenophobic. I think it's ethnocentric. But I also think that what it's doing is it's really keeping us away from looking at the important moral issues. And you know, what we end up doing is making unprincipled arguments based on animals we fetishize. This is also happening right now. The other thing that's occurring recently is this ban. You know, the Bill de Blasio just got elected, sworn in as mayor of New York City. He said he wants to go to city council and get a ban on carriage horses. And for those people who don't know, New York City, despite it being 2014, still has horses dragging people around Central Park. It's a really hideous, industry. But, you know, it's like no different than any other animal exploitation industry. And de Blasio is pledging to get rid of it. He's going to go to city council and see if he can get rid of it. And about 60% of the people, according to a Quinnipiac poll, about 60% of the people in New York are opposed to the ban. They want the horses to stay in Central Park. They think it's part of sort of the New York scene, etc. And about 28% are opposed to having the horses. I wrote a piece for the New York Times that was published on, I guess it was Friday afternoon, The room for debate. They invited several people to come and talk about this, and I was one of them. And I took the position that, you know, yeah, I thought it was a no-brainer that we have horses dragging people around Central Park. It's just a no-brainer. We shouldn't do it. It's wrong. Those animals suffer a great deal, and it's not morally justifiable. We shouldn't do it. But I then went on to say, but you know, those people who are upset about it, a lot of, you know, the 28% of the people in New York don't want to see that happen. Well, you know what? That 28%, a lot of those people aren't vegans. As a matter of fact, I would say most of those people probably aren't vegan. And so, you know, they're sitting around talking about how horrible it is that, you know, we're using horses in Central Park while they're, you know, eating their cheese pizza and their hamburgers.
And it's so, time for a break, Professor Gary Francione. We'll continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Gary Francione does animal rights commentary every week on this program, and we'll continue after these announcements. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, Twitter at GoVeganRadio, and if you'd like to email me, it's Bob@GoVeganRadio.com. Perhaps you'd like to advertise your vegan and cruelty-free products and services. We are talking... Oh, I did want to mention also that, whether you need, you know, 10,000 bananas to run a marathon every day for 366 days, or, you know, you need tofu chicken, whatever you need, you know, to, that might give you, you know, to get you to go vegan so that you have the moral standing to protest against the carriage horses and the Taiji dolphins and Michael Vick and all. The first thing is you have to go vegan. You can contact Viva La Vegan Grocery, VivaLaVeganGrocery.com, and order. They have 6,000 items, everything vegan. They have a store location in Rancho Cucamonga and a new one in Santa Monica on Ocean Park and 28th. Everything vegan, so you know, you don't have to read the labels or bring in your magnifying glass. It's Viva La Vegan Grocery, VivaLaVeganGrocery.com. Okay, so we're continuing with Professor Francione. So if we are all vegan, though, then we can protest these other things, right?
I mean, well, like, yeah. Well, yes, but I mean, frankly, you know, it's my view that given the state of things and given where we are, that, you know, it's a zero-sum game. You know, what we spend time doing is stuff that is time that we don't spend on other things. And my view is that we ought to be focused pretty much exclusively on creative, nonviolent vegan advocacy. Because, look, you know, once people go vegan, everything changes. Until people go vegan, nothing changes. So, you know, the idea that, I mean, look, I think if you're vegan, that's the first and foremost, you know, that's the most important thing in my judgment. I think we ought to spend our time advocating for veganism because that's really how we get sustained change. You know, but I don't think it's a good idea to reinforce the idea that, you know, I mean, I think this campaign about the dolphins, for example, is in a lot of ways, you know, is what they're doing to the dolphins terrible? Of course it is. That's a no-brainer. Of course it is. Is what they're doing to the horses in Central Park bad? Of course it is. It's terrible. But the point is that when we start fetishizing and sort of focusing on these single-issue campaigns, we lose sight. You know, I mean, if anybody really thinks that focusing on what's happening with the dolphins in Japan, apart from creating a lot of bigotry, ethnocentrism, racism, xenophobia, apart from all that sort of stuff, if anybody thinks that people are going to start thinking morally about the animals they routinely exploit, I'm telling you, that's fantasy. That's a complete fantasy. That, you know, and indeed, one of the reasons why we do these things like focus on the dolphins in Japan is because it gets animal people, you know, it's something that these animal groups can get people all worked up about, and it doesn't require they make any changes in their lives, and it does result in their giving donations to these organizations. So, you know, it just seems to me
that, you know, that we ought to be focused, we ought to be educating people. And what's really interesting is, in the New York Times piece, I made the point, I said, you know, if you're a New Yorker and you're opposed to the carriage horses, you ought to be a vegan. And I have animal people who are angry with me for saying that this is terrible because it gives ammunition to the enemy, because it shows that really what we're trying to do is get people to go vegan. Well, you know what? I'm not going to hide that, Bob. You ought to see the hate mail that I got starting on Friday night when the New York Times thing went live. I started getting hate mail from animal people who said, "Why do you have to talk about veganism? This, we need this as a single issue campaign, and we've got to be tenacious. And what you've done is you've given ammunition to the exploitative industry." Because you've linked it with veganism. And the answer is, I'm sorry. I'm going to give them the same response I gave when I used to go speak at hunting demos, and then, you know, the local television station would interview me saying, why don't you be honest about it? You're not opposed just to the hunting. You're opposed to eating animals altogether. You're a vegan. And I said, look, I'm not hiding anything. Of course I'm opposed to it. Animal people would get upset with me and say, don't say that. You're here just to talk about the hunting. And I said, no. I'm here to talk about what I think is morally wrong. And I think that consuming animals, eating them, wearing them, using them is wrong. And I am not going to say that it's not veganism. That's really all it's about.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the show is called Go Vegan, and people in the beginning told me, please don't do that. Call it Go Veggie. Call it something else. Well, thanks for being with us again today, Professor Francione. I look forward to having you back next week on the program.
Thank you, Bob.
Okay, thanks so much. Thanks for listening. GoVeganRadio.com for the archives. GoVeganRadio.com. Thanks.
952-303-9124 or on the web at drortman.com.